A new season of Bridgerton is here. And with it, a new season of Bridgerton, the official podcast. I'm your host, Gabby Collins. And this season, we are bringing fans even deeper into the ton. Watch season 3 of the Shondaland series on Netflix. Then fall in love all over again by listening to Bridgerton, the official podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribe to catch a new episode every Thursday.
Hey everyone, it's Katie Couric, and I want to tell you about one of my new favorite podcasts. It's called A Really Good Cry with the amazing Roddy Devlukia, a plant-based chef, entrepreneur, and now a podcast host who will guide you through a journey of self-discovery, one tear at a time. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Roddy Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, everyone. I'm Katie Couric, and welcome to Next Question. Today, the comedian who is gleefully shattering Instagram's illusion of the perfect self and the perfect life.
So much of what we see is BS. I'm like, there's something in that. There's a real funny idea behind the fact that this is all BS.
I talk with Celeste Barber, an Australian actress and comedian who's become famous for her Instagram feed, a stream of not particularly flattering photos and videos of herself. That feed, which is seen by 6.8 million people, got her a TV special, a world tour, a book deal, and yes, a podcast. But Instagram is still her go-to destination for comedy.
Because I am Australian, I live in Australia, I don't have to be on the road all the time. I feel as though I can put out a sketch or a post, and it's seen as a show, a stand-up show.
So my next question for Celeste, in this highly curated hashtag no filter world, what does it take to be real when we're all just faking it?
Social media only has the power you give it. You can turn it off. You can physically and literally turn it off and walk away from it. Or you can use it. Use it if you want. Use it to talk to someone. If you don't want to see something, you can turn it off or use it as powerfully as you want to.
Celeste Barber realized a long time ago that our culture feeds on a certain level of artifice.
I remember before social media when we'd get, you know, magazines. I'm a big fan of magazines. Always, I love fashion. InStyle was always my Bible. And, you know, you'd see a photo of a model in there, Kate Moss, for example, or whatever, Cindy Crawford, a gorgeous model in there. But you, well, for me, I knew that that was for them to do. That was Cindy Crawford on a motorbike, on a rooftop, in a bikini on a Wednesday, because that's Cindy Crawford's thing to do. And we kind of knew that there was Photoshop and that it was just very heightened reality. It was art, if you will. And I've always respected kind of that art form. But then when social media came around and it was being sold, that similar image, for example, was being sold as an attainable life or as something that just actually does happen on a Wednesday for everyone, right?
And something that was truly authentic.
Yeah, and living my best life or living my best self. And I was like, oh no, this isn't real. But the scary thing is it was getting to a point where you're like, oh no, people don't know that though. People are thinking that this is real. And it was like a bit of a snake in the grass for me, because it kind of seeps in when you're at your weakest, I guess. You know, you're 3 a.m. and you're breastfeeding and you haven't slept for what feels like 15 years and you're flicking through your phone and you see these images and you're like, oh, that hurts.
In 2015, Celeste posted a photo on her Instagram. On one side was a picture of a model in a ballet studio wearing sleek athletic wear, her hair elegantly pulled back, doing an incredibly flexible yoga pose. On the other side, a picture of Celeste on the floor of her home. You can even see a baby in the background. She's wearing gray sweats and is also trying to do the same yoga pose, but getting nowhere close. She tagged the photo, hashtag challenge accepted.
And then I posted it with the caption underneath it, I'm starting something. Because I just knew. I knew it was funny and it hadn't been tapped into. And I take the piss out of people all the time.
It was a visual joke Celeste had with her sister. And on Instagram, it was an immediate hit. Celeste did another and then another. And by now, she's created hundreds of these photo and video parodies.
The best way I describe it is I take inappropriate, half-naked, unflattering photos of myself and put them next to models and celebrities.
But
so
first
I do a
comes
parody.
But first comes the models
yeah,
and celebrities.
So I see a photo that they have posted and then I do my version of it. But it's a parody, so something's added to it. It's not. I'm not mimicking them. I'm adding to it. I'm doing a parody, satire.
Give me some examples, Celeste, of some of the funny posts you've done.
Well, the first one that comes to mind, which I think is probably the easiest to describe, is Cindy Crawford doing her Pepsi commercial where she so beautifully opens a can of Pepsi. Oh, she's so beautiful. And has a drink of it and then pulls
right,
her head
it was,
down.
I think it was a Super Bowl ad
yeah,
from way
so,
back.
Yeah, so but then she's done a reboot
right,
of it.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, for I think Vogue 73 Questions she did it.
Can you show me how Cindy Crawford drinks a Pepsi?
Well, I'll sure try.
So what I did was I had like a massive bottle of Pepsi and I opened it and so the Pepsi then sprayed all over me because that's what happens.
And you usually do this in a split screen.
Yeah, I usually do it in a split screen or with a video I go forward and back. And then, yeah, so the Pepsi goes all over me. Then I try and sip it but I'm burping because it's fizzy and it's all through. But then at the end I just try and be all really sexy and like Cindy. And, yeah, that I actually interviewed Cindy on my podcast and she was such a good sport. She loved it.
Yeah.
She loved it. And I was like, can you let Pepsi know and we can do something together? I'm still waiting for that call.
And yeah. and then you take sort of fashion spreads and it might be somebody in this ridiculous situation posing in a bathing suit like on some kind of contraption on the beach and then do it on a little rickety wagon.
I bring on my wagon. Like that was one of Irina Shayk, I think the beautiful model. Where she's got a gorgeous chair down by the beach and she's in like these amazing like little swimmers and she's just putting the chair down and sitting down and flicking her hair around and being gorgeous and then cut to me and I'm trying to put up a beach umbrella and it's trapping me underneath it and I'm kicking it and there's a wagon that's in the sand's in my face and then at the end I just kind of stand next to it defeated.
It's funny, but it's also I think, you know, you're tapping into how many women feel when they do look at these images that are unattainable and unrealistic. And it's been shown that social media really does contribute to anxiety and depression, not only for adults, but particularly for kids.
Right.
And is that something that you yourself were thinking about and worried about in the back of your head as you kind of poked a hole in all this manufacturing of an image?
Well,
that was a very long-winded question.
No, it was good though. I liked it.
Thank you.
With your arms and everything, it was lovely. To be completely honest with you, I did this because I thought it was funny. I primarily just want to make people laugh. Always have. And the fact that I am cutting through, I've always just cut through crap. People are never unsure of where they stand with me because I don't fluff around and go, hey. People, I'm always very honest and I've just kind of always been like that. So to tie that in with wanting to make people laugh, I think that's why it hit a nerve because it was kind of truth talking and calling it out and really funny. I think that's how it kind of cut through.
It also seemed to dovetail, Celeste, with the body positivity movement.
Right.
You know, that women can be beautiful and be great in all shapes and sizes. So you almost actually caught that trend as well.
Yeah, and that was unintentional as well. I never started this to be a body positive thing. I'm very happy to be caught up in that movement or whatever, like very, very happy to be. But it was never an intention of mine because when we talk about beauty, it seems so much of how we see beauty is literally how we see it and what it looks like. How I look makes up a very, very small percentage of who I am. I believe that for a lot of us. And I, so like, you know, some of the things I post, I won't look at again because I'm like, oh, that's a lot. But most of the time I see it for the funny joke that it is. I feel like people are laughing with me. There are people who are laughing at me and hate it. And again, go nuts, whatever blows your hair back. But for me, it was just not even a celebration of how I looked, but just a celebration of something else.
Your spirit, yeah, really.
Yeah, other. My sense of humor, my understanding of what's funny, my understanding of knowing that that is an unattainable lifestyle that we need to stop trying to strive for. And how funny is it if I try and do it? That's the main point to it. I mean, I do get, if I lose weight or whatever, I do get comments going, you're looking too good now for this to work. And I'm like, no, comedy, beauty, not oil and water. Shmush that all in together and it makes up who we are. And same with, you know, smart and beautiful, where it just showing the other side of social media as well, trying to use it for good.
And so you said that you are using it in a positive way, but also to, I think, get more opportunities.
100%.
And have other people reached out to you, Celeste, and said, we think you're really funny. We'd like to talk to you about a role.
Absolutely.
Et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, well, Tom Ford is a fine example of
that.
Oh,
yes, exactly.
When we made out and now we are boyfriend and girlfriend forever and always. Doesn't matter what he says.
Well, you have to tell the story of Tom Ford and what happened.
Well, he emailed, well, his people emailed me 3 years ago maybe, and it was, the subject line was Tom Ford and Celeste or something like that. And in the email it said, Tom Ford adores you. He thinks that you are amazing and would love to collaborate one day. Best, Tom Ford. And you know the sound an email makes when it comes into your inbox? It goes,
yes.
That sound had barely finished by the time I wrote, yes, what does he need? When does he want it? I'm on my way. Like I just, and CC'd my publicist, my mum, my dad, my nana, everyone that bullied me at school. I just CC'd everyone in on it and sent it back and went, yes, what do you need? And we collaborated before a show where it was a campaign that he has for Boys and Girls Lipstick, where two incredibly offensively attractive models are sitting at an airport and then they just make out and there's lipstick all over them. And Tom Ford said to me, I thought we could do one of it where you and I make out. And I was like, yeah, that works for me. That's fine. That's fine for me. So we did it. But then I just did a parody of being a model and walking down a Tom Ford catwalk.
So we need you to just walk here. Do it again so I can tell you what you need to change.
Oh, he's just liquid sunshine, that man. He really is. He had all the models come down and me come down as well, and like they got in my way and I was like, get them out of my way, and you know. And then when we were doing a fitting.
2, 3, suck in.
Oh.
You did it.
Oh, I'm cramping.
Good. Hop, hop, hop.
It's on. It's on.
Okay.
It's on.
We had some tape. Do we have some duct tape?
We cut it together in a way that he went, okay, thank you, Celeste. And he walked out and I then just started to try and steal things. It's almost like a Tom Ford smorgasbord. You're going to take
okay,
your things.
Thank you.
And then we cut it that he came back in and he was like, Celeste. Yep. I was like, someone's trying to steal things. And I've got like 18 pairs of sunglasses on and handbags with like one shoe in it.
Well, it's so exciting to have all of this happen to you. And when we come back, I want to find out about your childhood, mm-hmm. how you got into this crazy line of work.
Okay.
But we'll talk about that right after this.
A new season of Bridgerton is here. And with it, a new season of Bridgerton, the official podcast. I'm your host, Gabrielle Collins. And this season, we are bringing fans even deeper into the ton. Colin Bridgerton has returned from his travels abroad. Is betrothal written in the stars for the eligible bachelor? Meanwhile, the ton is reverberating with speculation of who holds Lady Whistledown's pen. We're discussing it all. I sit down with Nicola Coughlan, Luke Newton, Shonda Rhimes, and more to offer an exclusive peek behind the scenes of each episode of the new season. Watch season 3 of the Shondaland series on Netflix. Then, fall in love all over again by listening to Bridgerton, the official podcast, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribe to catch a new episode every Thursday.
Hey everyone, it's Katie Couric, and I want to tell you about one of my new favorite podcasts. It's called A Really Good Cry with the amazing Roddy Devlukia, a plant-based chef, entrepreneur, and now a podcast host who will guide you through a journey of self-discovery, one tear at a time. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Roddy Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I used to have so many men.
How this beguiling woman in her 50s...
She looked like a million bucks.
...with zero qualifications...
She had a Harvard plaque.
...tricks her way past a wall of lawyers and agents.
She's got all of these Maseratis and Bentleys all in the driveway.
Is it like a mansion?
Yes, it's a mansion. ...that this queen of the con uses to scam some of the biggest names in professional sports out of untold fortunes.
About $6 million.
Approximately $11 million.
Nearly $10 million was all gone.
Employing whatever means necessary to bleed her victims dry.
She would probably have sex with one of her clients.
Hide your money in your old rich man, because she is on the prowl.
Listen to Queen of the Con, Season 5, The Athlete Whisperer, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You grew up in New South Wales, far north coast.
Good girl.
Yes, we did our research, Celeste. So yes. What was your childhood like? Was that a very sort of quaint, remote, rugged, beautiful place to grow up? What was it like?
All of those things, but not rugged. No, I grew up right on the border of New South Wales and Queensland. So right on the beach, Rainbow Bay, Kira, Deba, like that's where all some of the best surfers in the world come from. Joel Parkinson, Mick Fanning, Stephanie Gilmore, Mark Ocalupo, Robert Bartholomew, they're all world champion surfers and they've come from there. And I never surfed in my life. I was a dancer when I was little. So, but it was just a really beautiful area. I grew up in specifically in a place called Terranora. A beautiful house that my dad built and my mum designed. So I have an older sister, Olivia, who is 3.5 years older than me, that people always ask who's older. And I'm like, she is older. She's 3.5. She loves it. Yeah, and I danced a lot as a kid and just was always quite dramatic.
And it sounds like... your parents, I read a sweet story about how they didn't want to medicate you, even though
because
you
I've got
had
ADD.
ADD.
Yeah.
And that they instilled in you a certain confidence in loving who you are for who you are,
yeah,
and not wanting to alter kind of your thing, your chemistry, your
right,
persona, your spirit.
Yeah. And I also don't really think they had much of a choice because I'm a lot and I like being a lot.
Is your sister a lot too?
Yeah, yeah.
Both of you.
Yeah, we are a lot. But so is my mum, and then when she's not, so is my dad. So we're all, it's a lot.
Big personalities,
yeah,
reign in,
yeah,
your family.
Yeah, well, I mean, my dad's a lot more kind of quiet and subtle with his humour, and my mum is so funny when she knows she has an audience and she knows people are listening. She's a bit sassy like that. But, yeah, I remember hearing them talk to the doctor. So I was diagnosed with ADD and they were talking to the doctor about me being medicated. And I was 16 when I was diagnosed. That's quite late to be medicated for ADD. It usually happens younger. Well, I think so, you know, younger in your life, earlier in your life. I'm quite grateful that it didn't for me because I struggled a bit. I struggled, was bullied a little bit at school, and I like I say, I was a lot. I couldn't sit still for 5 minutes, and it got to a point where teachers, when I'd go to walk into class, they'd go, "Let's just not worry about it today," and I'd go, "Sure," and I'd just sit outside.
Really?
Yeah, because I was distracting and,
mm-hmm, and disruptive.
Yeah, absolutely. So I heard my parents saying, well, you know, when we did the test, and I was very much had ADD. And I had to sit in the waiting room. I heard my mum saying, "We just don't want her to change. We don't want drugs to change her. We just want it to be a bit easier for her at school." And the doctor's like, "No, this won't change her in any way." And I remember my mum saying, "We know she's full on, but we like that about her. I'm getting emotional thinking about it. And I'll never forget that. As a 16-year-old girl hearing that, it was so lovely. And then, honestly, I took the first tablet of Ritalin, different. Like, sorry, same person. Just I sat and read a paragraph in this book about ADD, and mum and dad just watched me and they cried because I'd never sat and read anything in my life.
Wow. This was around the same time that your mom said, we like the way she is.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
They put you on medication anyway.
Oh, well, yes, but they put me on medication. They put me on medication because the doctor said it's not going to change her. It's just going to make her focus, and it's going to make up that chemical in her brain that she doesn't have that will help her to sit and listen in class and know how to read a story or write a story. It's just going to help her. And exactly what happened. I didn't change at all. I could just focus. And that's when I started writing jokes, and that's when I could kind of sit and really get into what it is I wanted to do.
So tell me what it is you wanted to do and how you did it.
I went to drama school. So I've always written jokes and just always been funny and loud. And always thought, it's not really, because I think comedy comes quite easily to me. I find it quite easy. So for some silly reason, I think, well, that's not acting. It needs to be hard and torturous and really, you know, a challenge every night or every day on set. So I went to drama school for 3 years, graduated, then started doing like a few little comedy shows, not stand-up but acting, because I'm a trained actor. I'm first and foremost an actor. And then I got a role on a television show in Australia called All Saints, which was kind of like the Grey's Anatomy of All Saints, without the doctor, without the McDreamy.
Unfortunately for you.
Yeah. And then I was on that for 5 years. And kind of played a bit of a lighter character to everyone else.
But it was a dramatic series.
It was a drama show, absolutely. And then it was my beautiful friend, Mark Priestley, who has since passed away.
Which was so sad. I read about that.
Worst, yeah.
He was a very, very close friend of yours.
Took
his own life.
Yeah, he killed himself. Yeah, that was a lot to deal with.
Was he an actor?
Yeah.
Yes.
Wonderful.
I know his name, I'm sure. He was quite well known.
In Australia he was. Yes. Yeah. This is before all Aussies started coming over and taking over Hollywood. He was incredible, and he was the one. He used to just come around to my house at like 3 a.m. with a video camera and go, "Let's just shoot stuff." And I'm like, "Yes. Let's do that." And we'd just shoot stupid sketches. And we thought they were the funniest things in the world. And I always thought he was so funny and so wonderful. And then and so did everyone. He was very well known in the industry and loved and sought after. And then the fact that he said to me, I'll never forget this conversation. We're sitting on set in between takes of, you know, someone's dying on their hospital bed in this show, really dramatic. But in between, you know, lighting setups or something, Mark and I were sitting there just like writing like a little sketch. And he went, "Maybe you should say," and then he just stopped and looked at me and went, "No, you know what you're doing." And I was like, no, right. He goes, "No, you know what you're doing." And then he went, "You know that, right? You're amazing at comedy. No one can do what you do." And he's like, because I was always like, "Oh, whatever, it's just boring." And he goes, "No, that's boring. You not understanding what you can do is boring now, so just get on with it." And that bang, that day on.
Really?
I just lent into it, lent into my strengths, lent into what I loved and kind of knew I was good at.
So where did your career take you after that?
Unemployment for a little while. I was then a writer on a show, a really bad show that we don't need to talk about. And then I had babies. And then it was when I had my first son, that my friend called me and said she's doing some stand-up. And I was like, good on you, because I'd always been told I should do stand-up. And I was like, yes, you are. Tell me where you're doing it. I'll send flowers. I'm so excited. And I was like, I know what's happening. I know what's coming. And she said, I want you to open for me. And she got me at a good time because I was sleep deprived. I had a newborn. And I went, she goes, it's like 5 minutes. It's in a small space. It's in the Sydney Fringe Festival. 5 minutes. And I went, okay, no. Yeah, no. I went, sure. Yeah. Yes. Hang up. And she just hung up because the last thing I said was yes. And so then I went, damn it. And so I had 5 minutes and I got up and I did it. And it was one of, you know, you hear those stories like Shirley Temple or whatever, you're terrified. But then you open the curtain and you see the microphone and the spotlight and you think, I'm never leaving. I will die up here. This is amazing. And I was supposed to be 5 minutes, and after 15 minutes, she was kind of side stage going, get off. And then that was it. That was me done.
And obviously you wouldn't feel this way if the reception wasn't incredible to your humor. And you did you and then did you sort of transition to stand up?
Well, no. Then Instagram started coming more and more. Like I did more and more. I was posting twice a day, every day on Instagram, because I knew it was good. I knew I wanted it out there. I wanted people. I sent to some of my friends who had like 10,000 followers who were well-known actors. I was like, can you repost this for me? I really want to, I think it's something good. And it's fun. And, you know, all my friends thought it was hilarious. And so I had, you know, excellent friends going, sure, this is my friend Celeste, and posting out for me. And then I kind of got to a point where I was like, I'm very proactive, always have been. I'm a hustler. I'm like Lisa Rinna.
I think
Rinna.
You have to be. You're the Lisa Rinna of Lisa, Australia.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a hustler. And I remember sitting at my computer and just went, well, there's nothing really coming in. And there's a lot I'm putting out. And I'm getting a lot of people want to interview me about it. And it was
and
really
feedback
blowing
and
up.
Right, instant gratification,
yeah,
right?
And I was like cracking. I mean, I may have been at 1 million followers by now. It grew really quickly. And I went, I wanna prove myself. I know what I'm doing. And I just in that moment went and just booked a theatre in Sydney, in Australia. I was living just out of Sydney at that time, had just had my second baby. And I was like, I want to book a theatre. So I booked 2 nights at this theatre called The Giant Dwarf in Redfern in Sydney, and then went, oh, shit. Oh, God. Now it was 3 months from that date. I went, I've got nothing on. I want to do a show. And I did, and I sold it out, and it killed, and I toured it, and now I'm making out with Tom Ford.
When we come back, how Celeste gave back to her native land in its time of need.
A new season of Bridgerton is here. And with it, a new season of Bridgerton, the official podcast. I'm your host, Gabrielle Collins, and this season, we are bringing fans even deeper into the ton. Colin Bridgerton has returned from his travels abroad. Is betrothal written in the stars for the eligible bachelor? Meanwhile, the ton is reverberating with speculation of who holds Lady Whistledown's pen. We're discussing it all. I sit down with Nicola Coughlin, Luke Newton, Shonda Rhimes, and more to offer an exclusive peek behind the scenes of each episode of the new season. Watch season 3 of the Shondaland series on Netflix. Then, fall in love all over again by listening to Bridgerton, the official podcast, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribe to catch a new episode every Thursday.
Hey everyone, it's Katie Couric, and I want to tell you about one of my new favorite podcasts. It's called A Really Good Cry with the amazing Roddy Devlukia, a plant-based chef, entrepreneur, and now a podcast host who will guide you through a journey of self-discovery, one tear at a time. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Roddy Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. New year, new name, new energy, but...
same old us. Oh, yeah.
And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. But that's not all. We will also have special guests to add their thoughts on the topics, as well as break down different political issues with local activists in their community. If you like to be informed and to expand your thoughts, listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
Now to Australia, where they're facing those massive fires, already among the worst in that country's history.
Haunting images, flames, plumes of smoke, and firefighters desperately battling walls of fire.
Another costly and deadly day in this months-long catastrophe.
The terrifying scale of Australia's bushfire disaster is beginning to emerge.
Bushfires are not new to Australia, but this fire season has proved to be one of the country's worst ever. By some estimates, as many as 28 people have died, more than 12 million acres have burned to the ground, and thousands of homes have been destroyed. And then, of course, there were all the animals. Because the devastation was so personal for Celeste, she did the only thing she could think of. She turned to her Instagram following. You raised, I believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, Celeste, $30 million, maybe more?
Well, I raised $51.5 million Australian.
Yes.
So that might be like 48 American dollars. I don't know.
Well, it's an amazing amount of money because of the wildfires in Australia. And this affected you very personally, not only because you're from Australia, but you had friends and family members,
and
you watched their homes go up in smoke.
Right. Well, my mother-in-law is in Eden, which is the complete other end of the state from where we live. It's the far south coast of New South Wales, and we're on the far north coast. And so it's where Arpi, my husband, is from. It's his home. And we were there for Christmas, and I remember going up the street or something and going, God, there's some smoke. And everyone, we knew there were fires kind of around, and that it was terrible, like in Canberra, our capital, and in South Australia and over on Kangaroo Island. Like, it wasn't good. But I was like, oh, my God, it is bad. And then kind of going, the smoke's really full on here. And then we left after Christmas. I went home, and it swung. It came really, really badly. And my husband's cousin lost her home. We've lost 1 billion wildlife. So I saw my mother-in-law, who is a very, very strong woman. Like, I had 16 years with this excellent woman, and she is a strong lady. And she was not okay. And she was panicking. And that really, it really struck me. And the thing is, she's so well informed and so hands-on, Joy, that she was like, no one's here. There isn't a helicopter in the sky. There isn't any ADF on the ground, which is not the fault of the ADF. It's a government thing. There's no one here. And I, that's when I went, oh, my gosh. And that's when I started the fundraiser, and I just said, please help any way you can. This is terrifying. And started a goal of $30,000, because I also saw people internationally going, how can we help? Because I've got a big following, especially internationally.
People wanted to help.
People wanted to help,
but they didn't know what to do.
Exactly. And I mean, there's obviously other places they could have donated to, but the way I ended up doing it was just really straightforward. It was just a kind of swipe, click, donate, done. And I think that's kind of what people needed as well. And then, yeah, we also, my husband and I kept everyone very updated on my Instagram stories, which were getting millions of views, my stories, because people are like, this is how we're staying updated, which is a really daunting thing, because you're like, gosh, I need to make sure I know what I'm talking about here.
Right, and it's a big responsibility.
Absolutely.
But it does show how media consumption has changed.
Absolutely.
Dramatically. It's instantaneous. You know, what do they call it? Citizen created.
Yeah.
You know, it's not, you're not a journalist.
No, and it's power to the people. I keep saying that. I keep, with the amount of money raised, and also when I would post about it, I had so many people going, oh, this is also happening. I'm like, oh, okay, cool. That's good to know. And I'll make sure that people know about that.
Or you'll add that to your stories.
Exactly.
Because
and
then you could give a very much a 360 view of
right.
the whole country,
and
I imagine.
And I was also acutely aware of letting people know that I am not the face of this. I'm not the savior of this. I'm you. I'm that person over there. I'm scared. And this is my kind of experience of the whole thing. And then we ended up getting to, oh, my God, $51.5 million.
That's amazing.
Yeah. And then turns out I've saved the world. No, that's not true.
But no, but you, I mean, I'm sure you helped a great deal.
It was extraordinary. As in Australia, our firefighters, majority of our firefighters are volunteer. And there were stories coming through of, I'm talking 80-foot flames in the sky coming at, that will go through over a few kilometres in 15 minutes. And you can't put that out. A human being can't put that out. That has to burn. You can't. But they're standing there in shoes that I've got on, just sneakers. And like with some of them putting their hand over their mouths because they don't have the equipment. So that's why I chose the New South Wales RFS to it was the trust of the
RSF.
RFS, the
RFS.
So, yeah, New South Wales Rural Fire Service. So the volunteers can, so then all the money then goes to the brigade. So then they go out and get the equipment that they need, hopefully.
Finally, the fires got under control and are now out, Celeste?
They're out because now we're underwater.
Well, tell everyone listening what has replaced the problem because now it's flooding, obviously.
We're flooded. I showed you a photo before we started of middle of Sydney, the city, and water is up to the windows of the cars. We're flooded. The fires are all out. But now we're flash flooding. It's
because of the deforestation and nothing there to kind of.
I think so. I've been here since. I mean, it was torrential rain when I left to fly here to the States. So I haven't been home to see exactly what it is. But it looks as though, yeah, that's what it is. It's terrifying. It's terrifying. And all I now go is, all right, I'll start another fundraiser. I'll raise another $51 million and see. I don't know what to do. I really don't. It's quite scary.
Do you feel like the world is a scary place right now? I mean, obviously, it's great to have moments of levity and relief through people like you and your humor. But so many friends of mine feel that we're in such dire straits in so many different ways.
I agree. I think it's a very scary time. I do, however, feel that there is a bit of a groundswell going on at home in Australia. And I'm here a lot, and I've been here a lot in the past few years when you now have a different president and everything. And when I first came over, when he was first in office, I was like, oh, this is terrible. It was very hostile. But since coming back more and going home, you know, back and forth and over to the UK as well, I feel like there's a real groundswell happening. And I think the internet has a lot to do with that because we can all, you and I can sit here and talk now and we can all reach out to each other more. But I'm just having this thing where I'm like I said before, power to the people. And I feel like that's really starting to bubble, which it needs to bubble quicker.
So before we go, what is your dream? I mean, where do you want to go from here, Celeste Barber?
My goal in life is to play the king in Hamilton. I would love to play. I can't sing. And I'm not a man. But I want to try and find a way to make that a character choice for that character to play the king. And I think it's the most incredible role ever. And everything I do from the ground up. And that's really exciting and amazing and exhausting. So I really like the idea of just being given a script and a call sheet now and just turning up to a film. That would be lovely.
And because you have a busy life and two little boys that are still 7 and...
8 and nearly 6.
Eight and 6. So yeah. you've got a busy life with your... Hashtag hot husband.
He's so hot. He is. Isn't he, Pat?
It makes me laugh that people come and say to you, like, good on you for snagging him.
Oh, yeah, well done. Congratulations, because he's hot. Yeah. But it's also interesting when my husband drops our sons at school, when someone in grade 3 walks past and goes, hi, hot husband. My husband's like, no, that's weird. It's Arpy or it's Mr. Robin. Please don't say that. That's very weird for me. Like, you know, a 10-year-old saying it. Yeah.
So funny. Well, I'm really happy to meet you.
Thank you
so much for doing this.
Thank you so much for having me. This is a treat for me, an absolute treat.
Well, thank you. Ta-da.
Ta-da. Thank you, Katie. That was lovely. Sit down.
And that does it for this week's episode of Next Question, everyone. I have to say, I had so much fun talking with Celeste Barber. She's so delightful, and if you like a laugh, she's a must-follow on Instagram, especially during these troubling times. Oh, and Celeste also interviewed me for her podcast called Celeste and Her Best. I love her friend Tom, by the way, who does this podcast with her. You can find that on the Luminary podcast app. I'm not sure when that's coming out, but keep a listen out for it. And while you're at it, keep an eye on Next Question. We've got a lot of good stuff coming, so make sure you subscribe on Apple Podcasts, the iHeartRadio app, or really wherever you listen. And if you'd like some help keeping up with all the news, check out my morning newsletter. It's called Wake Up Call. Just go to katiekurek.com to subscribe. And of course, you can find me on Instagram, just like Celeste, and all the other social media channels, although I'm not nearly as funny as she is. Until next time and my next question, I'm Katie Couric. Thanks for listening.
Next Question with Katie Couric is a production of iHeartRadio and Katie Couric Media. The executive producers are Katie Couric, Courtney Litz, and Tyler Klang. The supervising producer is Lauren Hansen. Our show producer is Beth Ann Macaluso. The associate producers are Emily Pinto and Derek Clements. Editing by Derek Clements, Dylan Fagan, and Lowell Berlanti. Mixing by Dylan Fagan. Our researcher is Gabriel Luser. For more information on today's episode, go to katiekurek.com and follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Katie Couric. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
A new season of Bridgerton is here. And with it, a new season of Bridgerton, the official podcast. I'm your host, Gabby Collins. And this season, we are bringing fans even deeper into the ton. Watch season 3 of the Shondaland series on Netflix. Then fall in love all over again by listening to Bridgerton, the official podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribe to catch a new episode every Thursday.
Hey everyone, it's Katie Couric, and I want to tell you about one of my new favorite podcasts. It's called A Really Good Cry with the amazing Roddy Devlukia, a plant-based chef, entrepreneur, and now a podcast host who will guide you through a journey of self-discovery, one tear at a time. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Roddy Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.